Hello.
Hello, Danny. Hi, Mattia.
Is it Mattia?
Yes. Can you see me?
Awesome. Nope, I can't see you.
Can you hear, of course? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, I don't have a webcam on this computer, so you can't see me.
Oh, can you see me?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Hello, sorry for being late.
Oh, that's okay. I was just working away here.
Yeah, where are you?
I think the lights are kind of annoying, so let me see. All right, I can move. Hold on a second here. It's a pretty big lab we have. So I'll move over here. This is better.
It seems beautiful.
So how are you?
Well, very well. I went to Milan to university, so I came back now. It is a bit...
Wow, now I don't know where in Italy you are.
What?
Where in Italy are you?
I am in the northern part of Italy, near Milan, in Como. Do you know Lake Como?
No, but my student... that is on the paper that you've been reading.
Yeah.
Her boyfriend, who was a student on a different paper, is from Italy and he speaks Italian. And so he said if I got into trouble, he would help me.
Yes.
So I said, no, he speaks English.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to talk with you about podcasting and what you've done in your school with students.
Okay.
Because with my teacher Luca, we are doing something like that, and we are working in a new way with our boys. And I'd like to know something about your experiment on podcasting you've done in your class.
Okay, well, what we did, because our department, we started with just a simple psychology experiment, and one of the things that we did was make it more science-based. In psychology, you can do things like, you know, abnormal psych and things like that, like a more clinical, but there's also areas like sensation perception, language comprehension, like that. So the actual lecture that we did was on the structure of the eye and how the eye works. Because at the time I thought, well, it's just a little experiment and we'll see how it goes. Well, so it went very well. What we found was that people who went to the lecture didn't do as well as people who had the podcast. And then what we found with the podcast was that effect only held if they used the podcast just like they would have been in class, like if they would take lecture notes or whatever.
So it's more important to hear something than to see something? Is that the result of your...
Well, I think it is more important what you do with the something that you hear or see. So if they listened and went about their daily lives like you would often, like, you know, I listen to a lot of different podcasts on productivity and I listen to podcasts of the news, but I'm not having to take a test on it later, right? Well, so these kids, the ones who treated the podcast just like as if they were sitting in class, like if they were listening and writing down notes and following the PowerPoint slides, that they did better than the kids in class. If they passively did it, if they just sort of did it while they were doing something else, they did worse than the kids in the class. And so, but the effect of the kids who treated it like a lecture was so large that it dragged the whole group up, you know, all the people who had the podcast. But it's not, you know, that's not really the whole story. The main story is that if you treat it just like you were in class. Now, another thing that we found was that the kids who treated it like they were in class actually did more than they would be able to do if they were in class. There's sort of a script that you follow where you go into a class and the professor lectures and you take notes. But that you don't, everyone doesn't say, please stop, I didn't get that, you know. They might, if they miss something, they might look at their neighbors or whatever, but nobody tells the professor, please stop. But on the podcast, what we found is that they did. They stopped and started and made sure their notes were very complete. And you can't do that in a regular classroom. So what we saw was the people who had the podcast that took notes, those notes were incredibly detailed and complete.
So you think it's a more informal way to teach?
Well, I think what it is it's for the people who are maybe don't take notes very well, or for, like, especially like younger people who are just starting college, I think it was a way for them to slow down the lecture without anyone knowing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
because they could stop and write everything and then start again. Also, several of them listened to them multiple times.
So it's a way to get, it's an easier way to teach, maybe.
I think in some ways it's a more structured way to learn in terms of your ability as a student to go back to what you had before. I'm going to move here. so don't get too nauseous. We have this couch in the lab that we bought a couple years ago. It's a very nice couch. Yeah. But when you sit on it one way, it's not as comfortable. So now I'm going to sit more comfortably.
you have so a lot of comfortable way to some comfortable seats in your school, I see.
Yeah, well, this is our lab. We bought this with our own money. So because we spent so much time here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sometimes you just want to have a nap while you're here and not go home. So we bought a couch.
You spent the whole day?
So now what we're doing is that was one sort of experiment that was with just one discipline. So now what we're trying to figure out is, well, maybe this doesn't work as well with, like, English. What happens in math? Like, we've seen people have worked out the problems for their students, and they can, you know, write everything down, and the student is writing everything down as well, and they can redo the problem because they're seeing it worked out in front of them. But there's no data on this. There's no evidence to show what do the students do with these podcasts. Do they really use them? You know, one of the things that I did a little pilot, I teach statistics. And in my statistics class, we filmed every class and we made them available through iTunes. And what we saw was my grades in that class were lower than they had ever been, but people were downloading all the podcasts. Yeah. So at the end, I asked them what was going on, and what their responses were was that they felt that, I don't know how to say this exactly, but it was like when they were in class, they might not have paid as close attention because they knew that there was a podcast out there that they could watch again later.
Yeah, so it is better to be used not in, in scientific subjects.
Well, I think what happened was that I think it is great for things. See, originally what I thought is that in general, if I go to class and I miss some things, having the podcast will let me hear them again, and I will use them in that way. But what happened with the students was it seemed that that gave them a safety net, but when it came time to really hear them again or listen to it again, they never did. They would
They put less attention.
That's right. They seemed to put less attention in the class, but then when it came time, they would download the podcast, but they would never get around to watching it again. And so
what's the solution?
It seemed to be like a crutch that they used that they didn't use very well. So I came up with some things that I might try in the future of my class is that I did like the idea of having them because several students did make use of them and they did better. One of the things that I thought about doing is instead of making them available, right now we don't have a way to have a login where you can. What I would like to do is say, well, you can have three of these a semester, whatever three you would like. So if you miss a class, you can have one. Or if you come to class but it didn't quite link in and you want it again, then you can have three. But that's all you get the whole semester. Because
so
I think that that would
make
them pay attention.
Sorry.
Pardon me?
They ask when they want a podcast, but they don't have always.
Right, because I think what that gave them was a false sense of security that they could get this again later, but they never did. They never made use of it. They just downloaded them. So they had them, but they never used them. And so this way, I think, and then it also caused them to not pay attention in class. And so so one thing, and I've seen that other professors say that they were always worried about if I made the podcast available, people wouldn't come to class. They have started instituting a attendance policy. So you have to come to class, you know, that's a different grade or something. We take points off if you miss more than three classes a semester. But I think that the problem was more than that. I don't think it was just coming to class. It was what you were doing while you were in class. And if you thought you could listen to these later, I don't think you paid as much attention. So that was one aspect that I found in my own teaching. The other thing that we're looking at is, what about English classes or discussion classes? How do students make use of these copies of the class? Is it something that you want to make available to students who came that day, as I did in my stats class? Or is it something that you want as something extra? Like, lots of people in theater, they will talk about something in class, but they're using podcasting to give extra material outside of class that they don't have time to present in class.
Yes. So you think that the podcast is a copy of the class, what you are doing in the class. But what about podcast? Maybe the idea that students can create a podcast. Because my teacher Luca is working on this idea, that students can try to create a podcast and entertain maybe, or put it on the net, because to be seen to other people.
Right. One of the things that that's really awesome, have you seen the flip cams?
Yeah.
So because these things are, you know, much cheaper and easily accessible, the other class that I teach is History and Systems of Psych. And so it's a history course about the history of psychology. And one of the things that is you can do in a class like that is you can have them create their projects on the podcast. You can also have them, what I've seen is people teach each other. Like, let's say I'm running out of time in the class and I want to cover, you know, a couple of people, but I don't have time to do it myself. So what some people have been doing is assigning, you know, sections of the course to people, and your podcast is you teach everyone else in the class that section of the class. And they download the podcast, and that's how they learn that part of the class. And it gives you a really good way to teach, especially other teachers, how to do this, because they get to see how they look. Other students get material. Also, other students can maybe grade them or whatever. Also, they can, if they want to, not do it all in one sitting. Like, they can edit it after to make a good product for you. But the cost is so much cheaper than it ever used to be.
And you think social network and the computer is important in the teaching? Not only podcast, I'm talking about Facebook or the internet and other things. How can the new network, social network, and computer be used in teaching?
One of the things that I think about that is, how old are you?
I'm 24.
Okay. So I'm 22 years older than you. I look young, right? So when we were young, when we wanted to know something, they would say, well, go look it up, or you need to look up the dictionary. Nowadays, I think that one thing that is very interesting is the amount of information that is readily available in the palm of your hand the research is mixed right now. Half of the people say that having all of this stuff available is a distraction to regular teaching. Other people incorporate it into extra parts of the class. And you think about it, if they don't know how to spell a word, they can look it up. If they want to know, you know, I like Manu Ginobili. He plays for the San Antonio Spurs. And he's Italian. I want to know where in Italy he's from. I can look that up in like 2 seconds. And the thing is that they do. They want to know something, they do. And so one of the things that you see in classes that is an interesting switch is that in some cases, when people want to know something, they take the initiative to find the answer because it's not that difficult. And so it could be that, some research needs to be done to figure out what is the nature of the distractions. Like, for example, when students first start taking undergraduate classes in college, I teach intro courses. And half of the people, well, let's say a fourth of the people are writing nothing. A fourth of the people are writing everything. And then about, you know, half are getting the right amount, right?
Yeah.
Part of organizing information is separating, you know, the good stuff from the bad stuff. How do you know what are major headings, right? How do you know what's important and what's just an example? And sometimes what we see with bad students is they are never able to separate out what's good and bad. And so even though their notes are very complete, they do terrible on the exam because they don't know the important things. To them, every single thing is the same level. So sometimes what we see in social networking and all of this ability to keep in touch all the time is that people don't, they have information overload. It's so much information.
So it's important to teach them, what is important and what is not, and to write only the important things, maybe.
I think so. I think that what I like about social networking, especially like the blogging, is very interesting to me, because one of the things that I start doing with both Twitter, do you use Twitter?
No, I don't. I use only Facebook.
Facebook and Twitter originally were two different things in terms of status reports. And what happened with Twitter, it used to be something that was where people in industry could send out short little bursts of information, and then they would put a link behind it. And the link would be shortened, and so it would tell people. Like if I said, hey, Mattia, I want you to go and look and see this website I have that's all about how much the United States is now going to fund online learning. I might put on my Twitter page, the United States decides to fund how much? And then I would put the link. And all of the people that are following me or whatever would go and do it. And Twitter was supposed to be for useful information, not just status updates. Facebook says, well, what are you doing right now? And it'll say, well, I am, you know, I'm waiting for Italy to call me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm wondering how come, you know, that, you know, when is the rain, you know, going to end? People write all kinds of things. One of the things that's interesting about social networking and these spaces is how much people share. Like, I would never share as much as these people do. That are often.
But do you think it's a kind of real life or another life that one can create? Because this is a problem.
I think that for the most part, the people that I'm with, it's really what's going on in their life. And so in some ways, it's made the world much smaller because people are able to connect.
Yes.
And one thing that it is interesting is that people will check their Facebook page 20 times a day and they'll check email twice. So I've learned in my classes, if I'm sick and I want to cancel class, I put it out on Facebook.
Yeah.
And more people will know than if I send an email to the class.
I think personally that Facebook is really a personal social network. Instead, I thought and I looked sometimes that when you talk on MSN and Messenger, they are less personal. They are a kind of mask that you put on yourself.
Oh yeah, that could be true. What I think in terms of classroom is, do you have Google?
Yes.
So do you use Google Apps at all?
Yes, it's my main page on the internet.
So Google Apps is very interesting because of what it enables students to do. They can collaborate on a paper that they're maybe all working on. They can share things with each other without being there. Now, for me, my campus has a lot of, about 3/4 of the students live on campus or in the area, and about 10 to 15% live in the rural area surrounding us. And because of that, these new things are like, you used to have a group project. If you're going to work on something as a group, we have to set aside a time that we can all meet. Now, with Microsoft Office Live and Google Apps and using Google Docs and stuff like that, everything can be be well synchronous. It doesn't have the same time. So you and I could work on a paper together, and I could go in and make some changes, and then when you, you know, go to, or you could go in and make some changes and go to bed because you're 6 hours earlier than me. Then when I come into work, I could work on it. Then next time you come on, you'll see all the changes I made, my comments to you. I mean, the world, the collaboration that can happen now, both in education and in industry, is immense because of these technological advances.
Yes, this is great, I think.
You know, so you and I are like thousands of miles apart, you know. You can see me, you can hear me. If I set up to do, now it's either screen share or video, but eventually the next incarnation of Skype is I will have a little picture of you as well as screen sharing. So if I wanted to show you my computer screen and we wanted to work on something, you're in Italy, I'm in the United States, we're both looking at the same computer screen.
And we can work together.
And we can work together. And I can say, well, what do you think about that? And you could say, oh, no, it's too low. Move it to the right more. And I will move it. And or you can move it. You can also touch the screen. And so I think that those kind of advances, I think at times they can bring information overload. So I think what will happen is, if we don't learn to, it's sort of like, remember when we get cable, if you have satellite TV, there's 250 channels. Well, a person can't watch 250 channels. So you learn sort of what's important to you and you follow those episodes. This is true with education. I think that people will become, they will choose one way or the other. I think people can become incredibly specialized. Like now in my library has very few actual journals in it. We spend most of our money on databases. And so I can get a JPEG file or a PDF that contains the article that I want to read. And so everything is becoming instant. If I want to know something, everything from where Manu Ginobili was born to a new article that's coming out, I can have everything in the palm of my hand within hours, if not minutes.
These are great things or social networks, but do you think there are also some negative aspects or also everything is good?
No, I think that what could happen is like the information overload. One thing that I find that's difficult for me sometimes is, like let's say I wanted to write you. If I were to write you 5 years ago, I would put something in the mail, and the best it would be is you will get it next week. So that's off of my brain for 1 week, and then you get it, and then you write me back. So it might be off my brain for 2 weeks while you're working on it. One thing that happens is sometimes I send out an email. I haven't even moved on to something else yet. I got a response. I think that sometimes I feel very overwhelmed with the speed that everything happens. I don't know if that's as bad for younger people who grew up with this. I mean, I did not. In the 1980s, when we used, I mean, Netscape was born near the end of the 1980s. Windows 3 was when we moved from DOS to being all of these, you know, pictures and everything that we have now. Everything was all text until the, you know, 91, 92. And now we have all these pictures and everything. And I think the speed of the world, we have, the world has become smaller at the same time that you feel you can easily become overwhelmed. So people who don't manage a lot of things at the same time well, I think they tend to be almost buried in information. I have students that are like that. They don't know how to separate out things, and there's so many distractions. So in some ways, I think for certain people, unless you're disciplined, it can be a really bad thing in terms of graduating on time.
And what about the personal relations between your students? Because if me and you, there's a lot long distance between me and you, of course, this is the only way we can talk. But what about two students near the one to the other? Is it positive or negative that there are certain social network between them?
Well, like even between them and between me, they text me all the time on my phone. And like if I want to know something, where are you? I'm supposed to meet you. I can text you right away. I think that I mean, one thing is, the minute they walk out of class, they're texting on their phones. I have a rule in my class, you can't text, because then you're not listening to what I'm saying. And so what I do in certain classes is, when I see someone texting on their phone, I talk faster. And then the kids go, wait, I can't get all that. And I said, well, I thought I was going too slow because Joe is texting. And so then all the kids look over and give Joe a mean look, and then we go back to normal, right? Joe will stop texting.
The kids you teach?
Huh?
How old are the kids you teach?
How do the kids teach?
How old are them?
My kids, 18 to 22.
Oh, okay. It's a high school, so.
No, well, for us it's college.
Oh, it's just college.
University.
Yes, of course. And just a last question.
Yes.
I want to talk something about your experiences with people detained in prison. What did you teach them, and how was the experience?
Well, one of the things that we're doing now is, do you know, have heard of Oprah Book Club?
No.
Well, Oprah Winfrey is a star here, and she started reading literature books as a, you know, with adults, and the publishing world went crazy, and so they, everyone has these book clubs. And guys in prison don't read very well. That's one of the problems, is their literacy skills are, their reading and writing are very poor. And so they give them these grammar books, but no one likes grammar. You probably don't like Italian grammar any more than I like English grammar. But one of the things that we know in language comprehension is, the more you read, you will get better at reading, and you will also become a better writer, because the way that you are reading and the way that people are writing, you will mimic that. And so your writing will get better as well as your reading.
Yes.
And
the
so
practical way to learn.
Yeah. And so what we've decided to do in the program that we're running this summer is, we started book clubs based on your reading level. And so, and also what we did was, we let them pick the book that they wanted to read. We gave them a list of books that are literature books, and some of them we could get donations for. And so, and then we had book clubs, and so they had a week to read different sections, you know, like, so 100 pages, and then we would, or read four chapters, and we'll come back, and we give them worksheets, and they write everything out that they need to know, and then we're trying to see, is at the end of the summer, does their writing and scores improve? One thing that we see is that they love the group. They love coming. And we have guys that are, they reading at like as if they were 10 years old. And there's other guys who are reading as if they're in high school, but they can't pass their high school equivalency. And so they still need to pass this in order to get what we call a graduate equivalent degree. And that's the test that if you don't, let's say you drop out of school, you can pass this test, and it will be fine. Well, they can't pass that test yet. So we took guys that were very close to passing and put them in a group, and they read level of books that'll, you know, make them better. And then we took guys who could read at like, you know, 10, 11 years old level, and we are reading at them at that level, and we hope to bring them up between now and Christmas to be much better readers. But we let them pick the books out of a list. And so they read all of the, you know, plot summaries and decide what the book is about, and then they pick a book. And one thing is that they are very excited about it. They don't quit the program. They want to come every week. One time we had to miss a week because I and a student go, and they were very disappointed. And basically the thing is, they've never been so excited about English. You know, they've never been so excited about learning reading and writing as when we read these books together and discuss them.
Yes, and I think this is also more it is important to for these people to try to get again them inside the society, you know?
Yes, the United States is different. Canada is much more, they have a lot more training programs for guys in prison. In the United States, it's more of a punishment model. If you have done something, broken laws or whatever, you go to prison to be punished, and they don't. But recently, that's changing, and so we're trying to help with some of those changes at a prison in our area. That would be it's a federal, so it'd be like an Italian prison, as opposed to a state prison. Like I'm in the state of New York, and so there are people who break New York laws, they go to those prisons, but people that break United States laws go to these federal prisons, and the place where we're doing these programs is a federal prison.
And do you think so our system of prisons and punishment is better than yours?
Oh, yes, I think so. I don't know that much about it. I've read a couple of things just in comparison. But I would be interested to know more, but most of the work is in Italian, which I don't read.
Now, I don't know, maybe because we are trying to do something with my teacher, Luca. He's trying to teach in a new way, because he thinks that the old way of teaching with tests and other ways is a way of teaching that put a great distance between the teacher and who is taught and the boys. And so this is a problem he's trying to solve, because the first aim of a teacher is to enter the heart, inside the heart of who is teaching, and teach something important to him.
I think that people that are this age, 10 to 25, 30, are very interested in technology and what it can bring to the classroom. So I think they are very interested in trying new things. And so I think this is, it's really been fun for me to add these new things to my course.
And they are also interested in these things, I know. No?
Mm-hmm.
They are very interested in new ways of learning, because I think podcast and internet and other things that are ways that and methods that they use in their lives every day are more practical and more concrete than maybe studying something in a book like maths or other things.
Right, I think so.
Yes.
Oh, I said it's awesome. It's very good.
Well, okay, thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.